Now to what you came for, I'm really delighted to introduce you to Lee Kessler from Charity Engine. I know we're excited to learn what he has to say under this title. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stage. So enjoy the session and take it away, Lee.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Kathy. Round of applause for Kathy. That's what you have to do as a comedian. You have to thank your MC for bringing you on. It's cheap applause, but it works every time. It is a given. So thank you guys for coming to this session. I'm excited to do this. My name is Lee Kessler. I'm the Vice President of Marketing at Charity Engine, donor management software. That's all I will say about this. This is not a shill presentation. This has nothing to do with that role, other than my love of fundraising, my love of nonprofits and fundraising and what goes into it and doing it right. But I want to thank you guys for coming. Is the sound okay?
Perfect.
Excellent. I want to thank you guys for coming to a session titled this, because it says that you guys are really cool people. All right, and I was just in that main stage. I saw everybody. You're the coolest. So just know that. But this is going to be a fun session. It's something I really love. And what's this really about? It's about stand-up comedy and the art of engaging audiences online. Right, we're talking about storytelling, we're talking about your brand. So we're going to talk about what the fundamentals that a comedian goes through and how you can apply that. And I would say there's sort of three themes that we're going to go through today and by the time we get to the end of this. The first is differentiating your brand. How to think about differentiating it. And the second is challenging yourself to think different. Not being afraid to think different and be different. And then the fourth, we're going to focus on the basics of engagement. What you have to, what's that? Did I say four? Do I already have a heckler? Literally?
Only one.
Oh my God, this is going to be hard. It is a rough crowd, wow. I can give you $100 trillion later if you pay attention. So anyways, to borrow the phrase from Jerry Seinfeld, what's the deal? With this presentation, why are we doing this? So I figured I would start off a little bit about me, why I'm here, to explain sort of what brought me from comedy to working in this field. I used to be a professional stand-up comedian. I did clubs. I lived in New York City. I did colleges. This is my cruise ship agent's website, my headshot on the right. And by the way, it is still up there. So you want to talk about how bad it looks like when you don't update your website? I think I've changed slightly. But I did a lot of cruise ships. And just so you know, when you guys talk about fundraising and the world, the people, the audiences you're trying to act, I have worked in front of every audience. And cruise ships, I mean, there are times you can do a cruise ship like Mexico at spring break. Fun, right? Awesome, wild party people. You get booked on the October Nova Scotia autumn leaf viewing tour. Let me just say, a lot of check writers in that crowd. Not really a young group. So I know that audience well. I did a lot of television stuff. I did a lot of pop culture commentary, VH1, MTV. Anybody ever watched Best Week Ever on VH1? I used to be on Best Week Ever, so I'm bigger than you realize. But I did a lot of, so I got to know TV and the world of TV and did a lot of stuff there. Had an idea for a TV show, and this is kind of what really led me to where I am now, was had an idea for a TV show and was knew a lot of people in the world of TV and people who could make production, cheap stuff, a lot of those MTV VH1 guys. So we decided to create a pilot and instead of just pitching the show. When I went to create the pilot, I didn't want to travel as much because when you have a chance to meet with network executives, you want to be able to show up when they ask. So I didn't want to travel as much. So I needed to stay in the city. I needed to find a way to sort of make money because you don't make any money working stand-up in the city, in New York City. Just so you know, when you see these people, you could see Jim Gaffigan on a Friday night at Stand-Up New York and he's getting $40. So there's not a lot of money to be made there. But so I got a job as a copywriter at a cultural arts agency called La Placa Cohen. Anybody here ever heard of La Placa Cohen? You know La Placa? You do. You used to. Oh, I don't think so. I would remember. Do you remember the guy who was also a comedian? No. Okay. One of us is lying. One of us is not telling the truth here. No, I'm just kidding. Well, it's great to see you. You're doing great. You look great. So La Placa Cohen, we specialized in cultural and arts agencies. So I got to work on these really cool accounts, the Met, Philadelphia Museum of Art. And I loved it because I love arts, I love museums, I love history, and I love the concept of sort of, at the time, bringing that sort of VH1 mentality to trying to get audiences to go to places like this. And we did some really cool, innovative, creative stuff. I left there because I liked it, but I really like brand strategy. I like what went into it, and I wanted to work on a big brand, something that everybody knew. And I got an opportunity to go to Arnold Worldwide Advertising, where I was the account supervisor on Tums. So an iconic brand, everybody in the world knows Tums. I mean, it's a phenomenal thing to be part of something. And there's a lot of brands here that everybody in the world knows, but it's a powerful thing. From there, I got into the brand research, brand strategy, and I started doing focus groups and getting into brand strategy. And I learned about that world of market research and focus groups and consumer insights, and did a lot of that. I did a lot of campaign type stuff, policy stuff, strategy stuff. And to me, it was all like stand-up comedy, because it's all, you're just looking for insights that everybody else is just missing. And you want to hear what is going on in the world that is important and special, but it just is getting passed over, because that's usually where an amazing insight is. So that's what I loved about market research. That led to an opportunity at Charity Engine, where 5 years ago, where I became the vice president of marketing. And didn't know, I knew CRM, I knew technology, but I didn't know nonprofits very much. But my wife was a fundraiser. So since I've met her, she has been in fundraising, chief development officer, special events director. So I knew the world enough. And about 3 years ago, actually, it'll be 3 years this fall, I wrote an article for Nonprofit Pro. They had asked me to write something. I came up with what nonprofits can learn from stand-up comedy, because I thought it'd be kind of interesting. They liked it. It got really good reviews. I was like, oh, maybe I could pitch this at Bridge Conference. And this was 3 years ago. And they accepted it. So that's kind of what led me here, creating this in the first place. So that's where the idea comes from, about what we're about to talk about. Let's talk about you. Who would come to a nonprofit presentation about stand-up comedy? Because I knew, like, I was like, I think the idea is good, but who are the kind of people who will come to a thing like this? So I started, you got to know an audience, you got to identify an audience. So I'm thinking, well, it would be people who love stand-up comedy, right? I mean, raise your hand, round of applause if you love stand-up comedy, right? There's somebody on here that you love, could talk hours about. People love comedy, they love stand-up, they love talking about their favorite comedians. I've spent hours of my life just talking, having that conversation with people. So I knew that people like talking about that. I was like, all right, so comic fans, who else would like a presentation like this? I thought, well, anybody who likes the book Who Moved My Cheese, right? If you're the kind of person who likes learning about the thing you do, but in a completely metaphorical way, you know, oh, motivation and teammanship. I got it, right? Did anybody here read Who Moved My Cheese? Okay, yeah. I'm a little disappointed in this crowd here. Anyway, so I thought, okay, that's a group who would like it. People who like kind of learning in a different way and exposing themselves in a different way. Who else would like it? Well, alcoholics might like a presentation like this, right? Thinking 2-drink minimum, sure. I could drink 2 drinks. But ultimately, it was anybody who would look at a list of available sessions, and there was something different. They'd look at all these sessions, there's something different about it. There's something kind of, oh, that's fresh, that's kind of, I don't know, I'd like to know more about that. And that's kind of the first lesson of this whole thing, which is to attract an audience and to change the world like you guys want to do, you have to stand out and you have to do something different and be different. This campaign to me is still like the most incredible campaign when you think of a brand and storytelling ever. You guys remember this campaign, right? The Think Different campaign. Now this is Apple. And it was an amazing campaign. I mean, billboards, there were buildings. I lived in LA at the time that this came out. Buildings that had gigantic paintings of Muhammad Ali. They just went so bold and big and different with this. And it has nothing to do with what they sell. What's amazing to me is this was in 1997. So you guys remember this. This is 21 years ago that they came out with this campaign. 21 years ago, Apple was like, we are doing something so much bigger than just selling computers. This is 7 years before the iPod, 10 years before the iPhone. Like, we look at this now, we're like, yeah, they totally belong in this category. But 21 years ago, no, they knew they did. And they sold this message of we're something bigger. This is an old Apple advertisement, right? And this is what we're, I mean, I'm in this business. This is what we sell. You sell features and benefits, right? You're like, oh, you're tired of doing it this way? You want all those things? Well, we've created a way for you to do it the easy way. This is for computer nerds, right? Somebody who's like, oh, I hate my detached mouse. I hate my, you know, this plug and that plug, my diskettes. And they were like, no, Apple's like, no, no, no. We got computers that are way better than that, right? But they're speaking to computer users, but not here. Here they were like, we're doing something so big. We're going to do something so big here. This is what we're selling. This is what we want you to buy. And I think it is an important thing to think about whenever you look at your brand. Now, we can't all get this big. This is a bold thing, but this is a reaction. And from 1997, this ran from these 5 years, and it was taken as a response to IBM's motto, which was think. Apple was trying to be the entirely different thing than IBM. And they were, because Steve Jobs said, we are not that. We are something so different, right? I love this story. Have you ever heard this story that he dropped out of, in college, dropped out of where he was? They said, if I never dropped out, I would have never dropped in on this calligraphy class. And personal computers might not have the wonderful typography that they do. And look at it. I mean, look at this thing. He was like, "We can. These computers, they're not all about numbers and coding. This is about beautiful stuff. We're going to make beautiful stuff. These are going to be about beauty in the world." And he saw that. And he didn't need anybody to tell him. He didn't need to have anybody tell him that this is how you do it. We think the Mac will sell zillions, but we didn't build the Mac for anybody else. We built it for ourselves. We were the group of people who were going to judge whether it was great or not. We weren't going to go out and do market research. We just wanted to build the best thing we could build. And I'm not saying you got to do market research, you got to know that stuff, but you got to believe in yourself and you got to trust that if I have an idea and it's the right thing, if I can, I need to, if I can prove it, it can work. And that's what comedy is as a comedian. If I think something is funny, it is. Right? If I have an idea and I'm like, oh, that's funny, that's a, it'd be a good bit. It is funny. My job is to figure out how do I communicate it to you guys in a way that you get it. Like if somebody ever tells you a story, right, and they think it's so funny, and then at the end they're like, well, you had to be there. Right? Well, no, I didn't have to be there. You had to do a much better job of putting me in the context of understanding why this was funny to you in the first place. And that's what this whole thing is about. But you got to trust yourself and do big stuff. And if you really believe it, see what happens. This, I don't know if this is still American Cancer Society's website, but at the time, I love this. This is powerful. This is, I mean, this is kind of that version of Think Different, right? I mean, it's powerful. They're not selling, supporting life-saving research, and it's not about that. It gets to that, but first of all, it's about anger. I mean, that's Muhammad Ali. That's Amelia Earhart. It's just a person. That's what people feel at that moment. What happens when somebody in your family finds out they have cancer, or what? You know, what do you want to do? You're like angry, and how do you want to deal with that anger? You want to make a donation. It's like the only thing you can do at that moment when you're full of anger, and that's what they're tapping into right now. Not how great they are, but like you're angry, we get angry, and let's fix this together. And this is, I imagine, this took a lot of challenging. This wasn't probably easy to sell to people. Easier to sell probably than this would have been. But this is a real. This is also a real nonprofit. I mean, this is that person saying, "This is who I am. This is what we are." When we're angry about cancer, we're not like, "Oh, we're angry." We're like, "Fuck cancer." This is a person who lost their life to it. This is his friends. This is how they are. They're not going to try to dress it up and be something they're not. Like, this is how we feel about this. Being different makes you interesting. Standing out, doing something fresh, makes you interesting. And that's what this session is about. The first thing we're going to go through, this sort of agenda here, that was just our intro, is the importance of being different. Hopefully by now, we've just finished that, and I've proved it. Next is, we'll talk about my experience being a stand-up comedian and sort of the three stages of artistic greatness. I'm not saying I was great, but I'm saying there are stages that get you to doing something really great, and we'll look at those, a lot of people who have, and also how that compares to where you are. Because even any nonprofit. You know, I was just down in Savannah for the DMA Leadership Summit a couple weeks ago, and that is the birthplace of the Girl Scouts. And when you're walking around, you see, when you take a little tour, there's a building, and it says this was where the Girl Scouts first had their meeting, you know, like over 100 years ago in this little horse shed. And like every nonprofit started like a comedian who's never done anything before. And it's the brand builds. So we'll talk about that. And then how it all applies to nonprofits and fundraising and sort of the key things that a comic goes through, which is finding your voice, creating content, the value of understanding and referencing pop culture, the importance of recording every set, showing face, we'll get into what that means, doing crowd work, and ultimately, bombing. You have to bomb, you have to bomb. And we'll talk about how you can bomb without really being bad repercussions, but that's how you get good at anything. So, a little bit about the three stages of artistic greatness. I'm going to take a quick drink of water, excuse me. What else was I going to do during that? So being inspired, which is how we all start. I want to do something. I'm motivated. I fall in love with this subject. Learning how to do it, becoming fundamentally good, and then making it your own. How do you become unique, different, and so people get why you're special? So first, my motivations, my inspirations. People always want to know, who do you love? Oh, I love Billy Crystal. Love Billy Crystal. He to me was amazing. First time I ever saw him, I was a kid. And I was watching, he was hosting Saturday Night Live, and he came out of a limousine dressed as Sammy Davis Jr. And I'm watching it with my father, and my father is like dying laughing. And I was just like, who is that? And he was like, well, it's Billy Crystal, but he's doing Sammy Davis Jr. Can't even get the words out because he's just laughing so much. I'm like, I don't know who either one of these guys is, but I want to know who they are. Like, they're making my dad react like this. And like I thought they were, he was a friend of his. I didn't realize the power of what comedy could be. And I realized at that moment it was just something super special. And as a kid, I used to be able to do impressions. So I'd do all of Billy Crystal's characters. And I could make the adults laugh. And I could do it. And you do impressions. I could do it clean. So that's kind of where I started. My second inspiration was George Carlin. Now comedy is on TV all the time, like Netflix is nothing but comedy specials. But there was a time that you could only see a comedy special on HBO. That's where you'd see a one-hour comedy show. And I saw George Carlin, and I, you know, this was my first time really being able to see a long form. And this guy was just amazing. I mean, even I was 11 years old, my mind was blown watching and listening to this man. And so I've studied him. And even George Carlin, I mean, everybody knows George Carlin, right? Everybody knows that George Carlin literally changed the world, if you think about it. The seven words you can't say on television, the way he challenged the FCC. I mean, this guy changed the world. But he didn't start changing the world. Like, this was George Carlin when he first started performing, dressed like he thought comics are supposed to dress. Short hair, clean cut, tie, jacket. He was like, well, this is what you're supposed to look like. I want to do this, and this is what I'm going to do. And that's how he got started. But at some point, he realized, that's not me. That's those other guys. That's not who I am. And he kind of morphed into this guy. And he let it go. And he probably went a little too far. At times, you know, there are probably people who sat through drug shows and were wishing he didn't go that far, but he did. I mean, that guy went from there to there to get to who he really is. And this is why George Carlin is great, not that. It's by being true to who he was. I assume most of you read that in George Carlin's voice. And that's how powerful that is. I mean, you hear his voice. It's just genius. So I love this guy. I mean, he was amazing. The third most influential person for me is... that was correct. So I started watching a lot of TV shows, like Evening at the Improv and Showtime comedy specials. And you saw all these quick things. And I saw all these young comics that were coming up when they were just, you know... I knew everybody before you'd ever heard of them. People doing 7 minutes on Evening at the Improv. And I loved it, and I watched it, and it's all I cared about. And then this guy. Nobody here knows who this guy is. This is Jeffrey Pollack. Jeffrey Pollack is a leading campaign strategist. He's worked on all the major campaigns. He was on Hillary's campaign, leading pollster. He was pollster of the year by the American Association of Political Consultants. He's a big-time election campaign strategist. He was also my counselor at Camp Comet. And at around 14 years old, we were talking about our shared love of stand-up comedy. He told me that he had a notebook that he wrote down stand-up in. And I was like, really? He said, yeah, I've got this whole notebook full of jokes. It never occurred to me to like kind of write down my funny thoughts. So I started writing down my funny thoughts. Got a composition book, just like that. And I had a composition book starting at 14 years old of just like funny things that I thought were funny. And the lesson there is create content. Because actually 10 years later when I finally got, or 8 years later when I finally got on stage, I had 8 years of comedy to choose from. For that first time I ever got on stage, it wasn't like trying to make it up. I'd written in that book for so long. I had jokes that were worth trying. So it's a good lesson in just start gathering content that makes you unique and is about who you are. You never know who you're gonna, where you're going to use it. Maybe it's blogging. Maybe it's just the occasional tweet. But something that you're putting down that says, this is who I am. And then my other inspiration was this guy. You may not know him. That's Jerry Seinfeld. Not my camp counselor. And short and bald. Here's a classic Jerry Seinfeld. Kind of gauge the reading speed of everybody in the room. Like, I'm afraid in like 3 minutes I'm going to hear a big laugh. So Jerry Seinfeld, I saw this kind of material, right? And along comes this guy with his TV show Seinfeld. And a lot of people, what do you think of Seinfeld, the TV show? What was it? It was a show about? Okay. So that's what we know because that's what they told us. But it wasn't a show about nothing. If you remember the earliest episodes, something would happen and Jerry would do stand-up about that. And somehow he would take what happened and make it relevant to stand-up. And then something else happened and he did more stand-up. And that's what the show was about. The show was about where a comic gets his material. Because to Jerry Seinfeld, that's all he cares about is stand-up comedy. And they had that was back when you had like Roseanne, you had Tim Allen coming out, and all these shows about, you know, family ties, all these shows about families, whatever. And their real thing was not a show about nothing. Their motto was no hugging, no learning. And that was all Larry David. He was like, I don't want a show that at the end of every show, everybody hugs and we learn something. And he clearly accomplished not doing that. But that's what the show is about. And they were unique to themselves. That's what they cared about. And again, it goes back to why you're unique. But so Jerry Seinfeld, what was relevant to me was all of a sudden, here comes a comedian who's talking about stuff that I can kind of understand. I can do. And now I've, you know, it wasn't like I'm married or I've got, you know, my crazy brother-in-law, that kind of stuff. This was stuff that I could have thought about. And it really exposed me to the idea of, okay, I can write comedy. So those... so those are my three inspirations. I'm sure people here love them too. So those are your motivations. How do you get started? I want to do this because those people made me fall in love. Now, how do you learn to do it and still find your voice? So the next part of doing anything artistic is learning the actual skill set and the fundamentals. So I did, in college, I did a lot of radio at WBRS-FM at Brandeis University, I actually did a lot of radio with Simon Sinek. You guys know Simon Sinek? Yeah, I did not think he was going to be anything great. He's a speaker. He wrote Start With Why. Okay, apparently he hasn't done anything that great, so that's all good. I'll let him know. It didn't work. A whole different culture? Well, Simon Sinek's going to get down to Texas, trust me. So I graduated from college. I moved all the way across country to L.A. to get started doing my dream of stand-up comedy. I moved there. I arrived there on a Wednesday. That Sunday night, I went to my first ever open mic at the world-famous Comedy Store. My whole life, this is all I ever wanted to do. I'd never done it. I finally was like, oh, I'm going to try it. I've got it. I've got my material. I've got my Ford joke. 3 minutes of material. Waited all day for my spot. Got it. I go up, and I was on stage doing comedy in front of a real nightclub audience, and it was crazy. And this looks like a lot of fun. I'm sure there's a lot of people who love to do stand-up, and you're like, oh, this would be amazing. But this is what it feels like. When you're doing stand-up. I mean, it's all a blur. It is scary. You're just like, it's going 1,000 miles a minute. You know, you're like a deer in the headlights, right? In fact, you're not even like a deer in the headlights. You're more like a naked guy wearing antlers, like a deer in the headlights. So you feel stupid in addition to you're completely thrown off. So, but I liked it. I got it, and I got some laughs, and it worked out. And so I kept on doing it, and that's how you do it. You just got to go do it. You keep doing it. And I would do show after show, and every night I would do two or three shows. And before you know it, you've done it. You keep on doing it. You're trying it, and you're going to bomb a lot there. You're going to fail a lot there. But that's how you kind of move up and learn the fundamentals. And eventually you get good enough that somebody hires you to be an opener. So you got a comedy show, and they're like, hey, would you do the first 10 minutes? And you got 3 minutes, but you're like, sure, I can do 10 minutes. Hopefully a couple years later, you get to being a middler where they're like, all right, you're good. We're going to put you in the middle. So you're not opening the show, but you're not the big headliner. You're doing maybe like 15, 30 minutes. And then you move on to become the headliner. And this is usually about 6-7 years into your career, right? Where you're good enough that you can do a show for 45 minutes in any situation, 45 minutes to an hour in front of any audience. And so this is sort of the trajectory. This is how you get there and how people become a headliner. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes years of just failing, bombing, and getting up. So that's the fundamentals. Then there's the third part, which is making it your own and finding your voice. And this is really what matters. So I was talking about in New York doing comedy, and the reason you don't get paid a lot is because that's where you get seen. That's where dreams get made. That's where you get on television. They're not making television, that kind of TV in you know, some small town. You got to go to New York City. And the goal is to be seen by a casting person at the right time. And they'll do showcases, and you'll do a showcase where you're one of maybe, they're looking at 13 comics, and you each get 3 or 4 minutes to do your act, right? 3 or 4 minutes is not a long time. So it doesn't even matter that you're good enough that you could headline for an hour. You've got that fundamental down. But are you interesting enough that they want to do something with you? And you look at, like Last Comic Standing, I'm sure a lot of you guys have watched Last Comic Standing, right? Think about it. Even the people who you love on Last Comic Standing, they're doing maybe 22 seconds worth of stand-up. And there's something about it that you got to like. They're getting it across right away. And you look at, so that's where that is. People like Aziz, you guys know Aziz Ansari. Aziz, I mean, he was like 16, 17 years old when he first started doing stand-up. He comes into Stand-Up New York. This was a 17-year-old Indian kid. You're like, who is this guy? And he comes in with this Southern accent. And it was just, no one had ever seen that before. I mean, he was young. You're like, you don't belong here. And it was a comic genius mind coming out of the Southern voice. And it just was, there was nobody else. There was nobody else that looked or sounded like that. You guys know Judah Friedlander? Some of you know Judah Friedlander. He was on 30 Rock. Judah walks out with a shirt. Always it says world champion hat. He looks like this. I mean, he grabs you right away. So in those first seconds, the reason I say this is it doesn't take more than like 7 seconds for them. You know who they are. You know what they're about. Judah with the crazy hair. Aziz with that Southern accent being Indian. This is a woman named Carmen Lynch. Carmen Lynch is very funny. She very tall. So when she comes out, like that's the first thing she talks about. So they're right away, you know something about these people, and they need to stand out. So when you do a showcase, I'm looking at something like Last Comic Standing, you got all these comedians you're competing against to stand out, right? You want to be the one that the network or the agents or ever say, God, there's something here. There's something different and interesting that we can sell. Now you look at all these people you're competing against, and they get 3 minutes each to do that. Now look at here, of those people, here are 6 white dudes, right? Dark-haired, young, white dudes. So like when I'm up in there, this is what I'm competing against. So now there's nothing original about being a white dude at all. It's been done. So how do you do that? And then how do you do it compared to these people without like being like a Judah who's got the big hat? You got to know who you are, and you got to be able to come out and say right away who you are. So do they know who you are, your act? Are you conveying to them who they are? And so to do that, I thought, and if you don't mind, indulge me, I would do my opening 3 minutes. Is that okay for you guys? A little stand-up comedy as part of the stand-up? Okay, to do it right, though, I mentioned before, you need an MC. I need a volunteer. Will somebody volunteer just to read? Sir, from Texas? Where in Texas are you from? So you lied to the entire room of people doing good in the world. Sam? And by the way, legal aid lied to us all. I just want to point that out.
from lawyers.
All right. So here's what I want you. You're going to be the MC. You're going to introduce me with this. When you're done, you're just going to go sit back down. Got it?
I have to sit down?
Well, I'm going to be good. You are.
Yeah. Coming up is a very funny guy. You might have seen him on VH1, VH1's Best Week Ever, or CNN's Showbiz Tonight. Excuse me, I'm reading impaired. He plays clubs, colleges, and cruise ships, and you guys are going to love him. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Leigh Kessler.
Thank you.
A round of applause for Sam. Thank you, sir. Thank you. At some point, he'll remember my name is Lee. Thank you, Sam. There we go. So I'll tell you a little bit about myself. Nice to be here. A lot of ladies in the crowd. I'm a romantic guy. Ladies, you like romantic men? You do? I ask. A lot of women want a tough guy, kind of guy who will fight to win you. I'm not that guy. I was more of a make you a mixtape kind of guy. Peter Gabriel had my back. I'm not tough, don't let me fool you. I ain't from the streets. I grew up on Whippoorwill Lane. I am so white and suburban, I took breakdancing lessons at the Jewish Community Center. Yeah. You down with JCC? Then you know me. I played football, which sounds tough, but we were mostly Jewish team. Whenever we'd break our huddle, our cheer was, as long as we have our health! We didn't win a lot of games. I was never like one of those white Jewish kids who tries to act black, though. I had friends like, I remember those kids? Like, yo mom, what time you gonna pick me up from Hebrew school? Yeah, I'm having my bar mitzvah because I got to get paid. You're like, chill out, Eminemowitz. We get it. You're the hip-hop hero. I actually always wanted to be a redneck. Any rednecks here? Just me? I did. I want to be a redneck, but I can't be a redneck because I'm Jewish. And there's no such thing as a Jewish redneck. You met one? They're not a lot. There might be one, but you're never going to hear Jeff Foxworthy do, you might be a Jewish redneck jokes. Like, you're never going to hear, if you had your bar mitzvah reception at the Waffle House, then you might be a Jewish redneck. If you have a gun rack on a Lexus SUV, then you might be a Jewish redneck. If you have a John Deere logo on your yarmulke, then you might be a redneck Jew. So that was my opening act. That was pretty good, right? Thank you. So hopefully you guys were entertained. Hopefully you found it funny and all those were good lines. But the truth is, I told you a lot about myself, right? In that short amount of time, every one of those jokes led you to know something about me. I'm romantic. I'm not tough, but I played football, which is a certain kind of tough. I'm Jewish. That didn't come across. I grew up in the suburbs, suburban upbringing. I'm not hip-hop, not that kind of cool, but I am also a wannabe redneck. So in that 3 minutes, I told you, I mean, really, a lot about me. You can kind of sort of start to frame me. So anything I say after that, any joke I do, falls into that persona. And it makes it easier for you as the audience to know where I'm coming from, who I am. I was clean at the beginning. You probably are going to trust, okay, he's going to be clean, things like that. So that's what you would, that's what we learned. So who are you and how are you like me? That is what comics need to do. And that's what you need to do when you're talking to an audience. Who am I and how are you like me? And we don't have to be the same, right? You don't have to be a Jewish guy. You don't have to be any of those things I am. But you know enough about me that you can find things that are relatable. And that's what people need to see. They get these comics, you get 3 minutes each. You need to differentiate yourself because you only have that much time for people to get excited about you. So we look at this again. Right away, This is what they're tapping into. It's not we're American Cancer Society, we're trying to eradicate cancer. That is the stuff they do, and they talk about it. But the first thing is just, this is who we are. We're the people who deal with anger. And it comes right away. This guy, again, right away, you know who he is. This is his style. This is this organization's style. And by the way, this concept isn't relegated to just this look. Right? Completely different look. Same word. This is another organization. The point is, each one of these presented what they're trying to do in an original way that spoke about who they are and why you'd want to align with them. You ever notice that? So here's some of the lessons of stand-up comedy. You ever notice that, right? People always say, oh, that's so true, right? Comics do say, oh, you never noticed that? It's so true, like the Seinfeld thing or the George Carlin. Those are you ever notice that. And those are truthful things that people identify. Those are real things that happens to us that we think, but we all skip through. I love this this screen. I've had the pleasure to work with Fisher House in the past. Fisher House is an amazing organization. I don't know if you guys know Fisher House. They sort of bill themselves as, and they'll say this, the Ronald McDonald House for military families. And that's what they are. They are providing a place for military families. When somebody in the military, a father or a mother, is injured or a child is injured, their parents, their spouse, their kids have a place to help be there with them and recuperate. And they're not living out of the car and they're not living out of a motel. They're living out of a home. And this is a moment we all have. There's every parent here has taken a picture of their spouse and their kid walking behind, right? You've all taken this picture. We all know this moment. And they captured that. They didn't just tell you what they did. That's like, this is what they're selling. This right here. Every parent has ever traveled through the airport with their child, knows how stressful it is. Imagine you're traveling through the airport because you just found that your spouse is in the hospital in Germany and you need to get somewhere. You do not have time to think about packing your bag, making sure you have everything you need. You just got to go. And that girl's face shows you this is what they're doing. It's not just veteran services. We're helping them. Right away, it's different. Pop culture references. All right, pop culture references go a long way. This was a campaign that Operation Blessing did a couple years ago, and I loved it. I love. Are there any are you guys Operation Blessing? Any OBP? You are. Do you know about this campaign? That was your campaign. A round of applause. How did it do? Engagement was up. Right. And it is. That's what it is. That was the goal. It was engagement. It was acquisition. It was getting your name in front of people, making them like you, making them realize that your version of what you were selling was something that they related to. I mean, I did not know you're going to be here. I absolutely love this. I mean, it was super powerful. You tapped into what was happening, what people were talking about, what they're thinking about it, and you did it in a way that only you could have done it. Or very few organizations could have tapped into Shark Week the way you did. And I mean, I hope that inspires somebody to be like, let's try something unique to attract people. Another organization, Treehouse Humane Society, did this fantastic Real House Cats of Chicago thing. And they had these videos, and they created these videos of these house cats, and they all had the music of Real Housewives, and they presented the story in a way, because like, what do people love on video, on the internet? They love cats, right? The people, they're trying to attract people. They're like, look, we're cool. We're Bravo watchers. We're Andy Cohen fans. We're just like you. And that's what this whole thing is about. And they provide a home, and they sold it. And they kept on going with it. Right? I mean, they just found something, and they're like, this is kind of who we are. We're playful, and we're having a good time with it. They did an event, the Black Cat Ball. Trust me, I'm sure people who attend there are the kind of people who throw Oscar parties, right? And they tapped into that and made it feel all part of that same thing. So think about pop culture references and how that reflects who you are and the way you view the world, because it looks really good. It looks cool up there. So doing crowd work. This is so important. Doing crowd work. So every comic you see, right, they know they do crowd work, and they come up, where are you from? What do you do? Anybody on a date? Anybody have kids? And the reason comics do crowd work, is sometimes it's because, like I said, you don't have enough material, right? So you're trying to fill time, or it's just, but the real reason is usually because when you do crowd work, you connect with people, right? And if I just stand up here and I do my act and I'm like, laugh at me, laugh at me, laugh at me, and you stop laughing, you're not laughing, what's the point for either one of us, right? My job as a professional comedian would be to stop and re-engage you. To do that, I've got to pull you back in the room and make it a conversation again, not just me doing my act and you sitting there. And how do you do it? You stop, you ask where you're from, what do you do, anybody married, these things. And then maybe I can spin, anybody have kids? Now I can go into material about kids, but I can make it conversational with them. So I take what they care about. They weren't into laughing. And this is really important. So I think here, a great example, we donate. They're trying to get you to donate. They're putting all these things. But it's kind of crowd work. Like, how can we help you? Like, what do you care about? Who are you? What are you looking for? Like, just putting that right there. And it's not that hard to have engines in your website that can help you index stuff so people can find the thing that they're looking for. Here's National Ovarian Cancer Coalition. Learn more. Right there, they put it there. They're kind of like, go. They've got the search box up there. It really limits the things you could do. They make it about, you either want this or what can we do for you? So that's the value of crowd work. Never, you know, if somebody goes to make a donation, they're not really into it. Find out what they do care about. And then you can hopefully use the right technology so you're tracking that and you remember that they were on this and they care about this. And so you can maybe communicate the thing they're expressing they care about. Take any gig. Let me just check our time. This goes till what time? 11:15? 12:15? Cool. You guys, we're going to go over like about like 45 minutes. 12:30. Okay, we're going to go over 30 minutes. No, I'm just kidding. So take any gig. By the way, rule number one in performing, always bring water on stage with you. You get parched, you get dry, and there's nothing worse in that moment where I've had that happen. I had that happen where, like, I lost it. My throat went dry, and, like, I needed a waitress to come up and get it for me. That entire 4 minutes of on stage as I'm waiting for the waitress to get water, that was not fun for the audience. It was not fun for me. I learned that time. Always bring water. So take any gig. As you're figuring out your message, as you're figuring out your brand, perform it in front of anybody. Right? Say it in front of anybody. Put it in any opportunity you can speak to people about what you do. Do it. It helps make you a better public speaker. It helps make you comfortable with that. But it helps you articulate your message. You say it to people over and over again. And it's a great way to try new material. When you're talking to people, no matter where they are, you can change it for the room. Anybody will have you speak about what you do. It's an opportunity to get better, to communicate, and that might mean things like blogging. Somebody gives you an opportunity to blog. It could mean writing a guest post on a website. Whatever it is, just put it out there. Somebody invites you to speak in front of a small group. Speak in front of the small group. There were times you do comments, stand up. We'll do material. We'll do our act in front of one person. There were times I would literally go up. I was like, "There's nobody in the audience. I'm just practicing using the microphone. I'm going to practice taking the microphone off the thing." Putting it back on the mic stand. Thank you for remembering what the word was. But being able to move it around, like go up there and have a purpose and try new things and talk, and so you can become better at the thing you do. You can't sit home and just hope you put something out and people will find it. That's how you get your material down. That's how you get your brand down, and that's how you experiment with who I really am. Who, you know, when you talk about what you do, that's the chance to say not what, you know, we're here to eradicate cancer and we're here to provide world-class funding of research, but it's like, I'm here, if you've ever been in that moment where you're just angry, and that's when people react to that, you're like, okay, there's something there, and that's what is valuable. This was one of my favorite places to perform. Anybody ever been to the Duplex in down there? You've been to Duplex in New York City? So the Duplex is down in the West Village. It is a gay bar. And I got to tell you, when you're a straight white dude at a gay bar, they don't love you. And it is hard. It is one of the most challenging audiences. But when you can get them and you're working it and they start laughing, it's like, okay, I've connected with people, and that makes you better at connecting. You got to be able to connect in front of any audience you're in front of. You've always got to find out, who are the people who would care about my message? What's the part of my message they would care about? And how do I communicate it into a way that they appreciate it? So showing face. I was talking about the concept of showing face. And showing face is when you just go and you hang out in a comedy club, right? Sometimes you'll be out, you'll do shows early, and people are like, oh, what are you doing? You're like, oh, I'm going up to Comic Strip. Oh, what are you doing? You know, you're doing a spot. No, I'm just going to show face. Right, I'm going to show my face. I'm going to market myself. I'm going to be in front of my community and the people who do what I do, and I want them to know me, because if I'm sitting in my apartment right now, nobody is going to find out that I'm interested in being a comedian. And I'm certainly not going to get a call from that comedy club if somebody else bails saying, hey, could you fill in? But if I'm showing face and people know me and they trust me and they like me and I'm hanging out at the bar and all of a sudden the 1120 spot doesn't show up, they're like, hey, Lee, can you go on? You bet I can. And that's, and they see you and you're good. And they're like, oh, Lee's pretty good. And that's how that happens. And that's got to translate to anything you do in life. But again, take any gig, show your face, be in front of people, find a way to be in front of people. Don't force yourself on them. You don't go and say, hey, can I have a gig tonight? You got a gig, you know, can I get a spot tonight? Just go, be part of what they do, understand what they do. And that's the thing to learn. And then this is, sort of the most important part, which is recording every set, okay? Every comic records every set, right? Whenever you go to a club, you always see like a guy, he's got a little tape recorder on the stage. You've got to record it because you never know what you're going to learn from every single performance. You never know what you're going to hear. You may try something new and you don't know what it was and you forget it. Because you're on stage, you're like, oh my God, that was amazing. I riffed this like 30 minutes of something. I don't remember it. Well, I recorded it, so I have it. But let's say I'm trying something out, and I've got a bit, and I'm like, oh, they kind of get it, but they don't get it. I go back and listen. I see where the laughs were. Or did I change the way I said a word? Or did I reorder words? By recording that, I can hear where those changes were, and that's using data. And that is essential. If you don't go back and listen to your set, you will not get better. The material will not get better. You will not find you. And that's why capturing data on anything you do in fundraising is essential, right? You do all these things. You have all these ideas. If you can't look at data to validate it, and you can't look at the data and figure out what worked and what didn't work. And it's got to be good, accurate data. If I listen to the recording, I know what it is. I know what that. I know that that is all the data I need. As much data as you can have on every little thing you do, and use it and figure it out, because that is how you get better. That's market research. Market research data, trying it, right? You do focus groups. You don't have to pay for focus groups. You can focus group things on anybody. Just try, find out how people react to different things, and that will help you get better. This is Jerry Seinfeld talking about how he got better and what he learned early on. And he said the way to be a better comic was to create better jokes. And the way to create better jokes was to write every day. He told me to get a big wall calendar. He was talking about a more experienced comedian who'd mentored Jerry. He told me to get a big wall calendar that has a whole year on one page and hang it on a prominent wall. And the next step was to get a big red magic marker. And he said, for each day that I do my task of writing, I get to put a big red X over that day. And after a few days, you'll have a chain. And you just keep at it, and the chain will grow longer. You like seeing that chain, especially when you get a few weeks under your belt. And your only job is to not break that chain. Comedian, you got to keep writing. You got to keep performing. You got to keep putting stuff on paper. No matter what you do, you just got to keep doing more of it. We live in a content-heavy world. We live in a fresh content-heavy world. And you've just got to keep putting out stuff that are relevant. It doesn't have to be that you slam people with it all the time. That's what Twitter is for. That's what Facebook is for. That's what those other social tools are for small little messages of just getting that out. But it's got to be, you've got to have a plan, and you got to keep on getting better and putting more and more. And that to me is, whatever you're doing, the most important thing. That's actually the entire thing. Don't forget to tip your waitress. That's how you end any comedy act. So that's the presentation. I do, if anybody has any questions, and it looks like we do have a little bit of time. Does anybody have any questions? I'm happy to answer anything. Sir, what can I tell you? Yeah, absolutely. So, from a comics perspective, or what I think it looks like in terms of fundraising? In terms of fundraising. So, it's the same thing, which is you just can't be afraid of a bad reaction. You can't be afraid of looking stupid. You can't be afraid of if something not working. Something doesn't work until you make it work, right? And put stuff out there in front of people. Do small segment testing. But don't be afraid to do something. Take the time to, again, strategize with it. If you have this kernel and you believe in it, keep doing it and getting it right. And don't be afraid and say, oh, it didn't work this time, so I was wrong. Just how can you keep testing it? But it's the lesson in anything. You just can't be afraid of failure. Now, I know it's hard in fundraising because you're working with other people's money and you have that responsibility of other people's money and you want to get it right and you have other people relying on you. So all that does matter. But for a group like ACS to put up something like that anger, they could have bombed. There's a lot of Operation Blessing. It could have bombed. But that's how you get good. And if it does roll away, keep going and do the next thing. But get the data to figure out why it bombed so you get better. A concept called fail fast. Well, I've done that. Yeah. 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 Right.
And you want to encourage people to try things.
Right.
So if you're not failing, you're not trying things.
Right.
You
absolutely do. And by the way, just going back to the Apple concept, when they came out with the iPad, I mean, there was a lot of making fun of that name. If you remember, like, people were laughing, oh, the iPad. I mean, that was not a positively received name. And it could have bombed, and if they listened to what people were saying, they probably would have stopped and rechanged it. But they also knew that what they were trying to do with it was bigger than just that first time where people have a negative reaction, and they'll get over it, and it fit into everything else they did. And the fact that it fits into the iPod, iPad, iPhone, you know, iTablet just doesn't sound as good, right? iDevice just doesn't sound as good. iScreen, whatever it is, it just doesn't sound as good as iPad. So bomb, get it over, let people make fun of it, and then 10 years later, it becomes the world's, you know, largest selling device. So. Always. Yeah, you said polarity was the word you used? In yeah. Well, I mean, you can offend people with what you're saying. I mean, that anger, I mean, that there's messages you can have. There are people who look at that F-U-C-K cancer and they're going to be offended. So you can't be scared of that. You has to be true to who you are. If you're just winging out, American Cancer Society just puts F-U-C-K cancer on their thing, that's not in line with their persona. But that's why you establish your persona early, then you let people know who you are, because it gives you freedom to communicate in a way that maybe you can push the sides farther, but it fits into what they know about you. If you just come up and you're throwing F words around and there's no system to it, people aren't going to appreciate it. But by establishing, if people know who you are, they'll let you go in different directions. And I think if that makes sense. The more you're true to who you are, you can expand farther as long as it fits into that, is my experience. And that's in branding and anything. I mean, that's not just fundraising, but that's anytime you're communicating a brand. Because I remember with the market research stuff, I did a lot of things where people are testing branding, testing looks, testing words, testing slogans, and you see what people can get away with and what they can't. Any others? Then we'll just sit here quietly for 20 minutes. You're not allowed to leave, people. Well, I thank you guys for coming. I hope this was enjoyable. I hope you saw something new and different. Thanks for coming to Bridge. And really give me an incredible rating is the other thing that I need. So thank you guys very much.